Welcome to the Maya on Money podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. Now, dear listeners, I have to tell you that just this week, I've been restructuring my offshore investments. So partly for tax reasons, but mostly for estate planning. Because when I started my offshore investment portfolio many, many, many years ago, it didn't really feel like that much money to worry about tax. But over the years, it's actually grown significantly. So each year, the amount of tax that I'm paying on foreign dividends has been increasing. And let me tell you, the more I have to pay SARS every year, the less happy I am. I also now have to start worrying about something called situs. But most importantly, actually, when I sat with my financial planner, I realized that it's around estate planning. I hope to live a long, long, long time and spend all my money, but I have to think about my husband and sons as beneficiaries and what this all means to them. So I was thinking, I can't be the only one worrying about these taxes and estate duty. So I've invited today Ilana Nell, who's fiduciary specialist at 91, to help unpack the complexities of estate planning with offshore assets. So, welcome, Ilana.
Thank you, Maya. Very nice to join you today.
Well, I'm really looking forward to picking your brain. This is the best part about being a journalist, is I get to speak to experts like you and then apply it to my own life. So, thank you very much. I just want to start off with, which I also was discovered in all of these things, and I was looking into it, is understanding the challenges with estate planning when you have both local and foreign assets.
Yes, Maya. As the 91 investment platform, we partner daily with independent financial advisors, and how your foreign assets play into your estate plan is really very topical for our advisors. Now, I think the most important thing is that every country's rules are really different. So some countries charges no tax in the event of someone's death. And some countries charges the estate with a tax, and some countries charge the heir or the beneficiary that receive an inheritance. And in some jurisdictions, like South Africa, death is also a capital gains tax event. And in some jurisdictions, you have a stamp duty or a probate fee that's applicable. So really, for every scenario, you have to consider the rules of the jurisdiction where the deceased was a tax resident. You have to consider the rules of the jurisdiction where that deceased person owned assets. And then you have to consider the rules of the jurisdiction where the beneficiaries in the person's will or the nominated beneficiaries are also tax resident. So, you can see that for someone who's or was a South African tax resident with only South African assets and only South African beneficiaries, it can be quite simple. But for someone with family members that has moved overseas and have assets that spread across various jurisdictions, it can really become very complex, and there can be quite a few jurisdictions that you have to actually end up considering.
And I think that's quite an important point because we do see families dispersing across the world. And so
Yes.
the people that inherit also have a whole lot of other rules that could be very different from the rules where your funds sit. So and this is what I realized. And I think Ilana, when I as I talked, I think when I started investing, I mean offshore, it was like 20 years ago, when I first, and none of these things were not as complicated, I think, in those days, partly because I get a sense that authorities globally have been really chasing tax a lot. So a lot of these tax issues have becoming more and more under scrutiny, and maybe that's why we need to be really thinking about this quite seriously.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think what has also changed is that if you think back to 20 years ago when you started investing offshore, you were quite limited in the amount of funds that you could take out of South Africa. And that has changed quite significantly. So there's so many sources now or ways for you to externalize funds. And it's become common for South Africans to have foreign investments. But our rules and the practice has not necessarily kept up with that. So sometimes you have to still utilize the rules that's been put in place many years ago, but no longer does a South African person's estate look the way that it did 20 years ago.
Exactly, which is, I suppose, why it's not a fin it's financial planning. It's an ongoing it's an ongoing process, and why I'm now sitting with
Absolutely.
my financial planner to do my planning. But then, of course, we also have the complexity of exchange control. So how does that affect the winding up of an estate if you have assets offshore?
Yeah, I think that's very important, and it's important to remember that the executor remains bound by the South African exchange control rules. So, where you have foreign assets, you can bequeath those foreign assets to your South African beneficiaries or even to a foreign trust if you have that in place. And since 2022, that receiver of the foreign inheritance no longer have to declare it to the Reserve Bank. You can also leave South African assets to foreign beneficiaries where, for example, your child has immigrated and is a proper non-resident. But what you cannot do is leave South African assets to externalize it, for your executor to externalize it and pay it to a South African resident abroad. So there you have to be careful to make sure that you do not in your will, for example, attempt that your executor must achieve that, because then you can run into practical difficulties.
So this would be an investment that was held locally in South Africa, and then you instruct in your will, I want to leave it to Johnny, but I want you to transfer it offshore and then leave it to Johnny, if Johnny is South African based.
Correct. So in the
As,
same
and
way that you
sorry, I just want to clarify there. If Johnny is a South African tax resident, so maybe Johnny's living in London currently, working there, but he's still a South African tax resident, would that kind of be where the issues could arise?
Yes. So you'll recall, Maya, that in the past we had these different rules between exchange control resident and South African tax resident. So now it's about whether you have ceased your South African tax resident or whether you are still a South African tax resident. So where Johnny has not formally gone through the process to cease his tax residence in South Africa, he would not be able to receive that inheritance outside of South Africa. Can be paid to him locally and he can apply to externalize that funds, but the executor would not be able to pay to him
Okay.
outside of South Africa.
Very, I think a very key point to understand. Now, I mentioned CITES, which came as a bit of a surprise to me, I have to be honest. And that I could actually be in a position where my estate would have to pay money to the US, which right now is not something I want to do. So maybe just explain what it is and when it's actually triggered.
Okay, so yeah, so CITES tax refers to a tax based on the location of the asset as opposed to the location of the owner of the assets. So in the US, it's applicable on the death where you owned US situated or located assets. Now, that can be US real estate, it can be cash or securities, shares, or business interests. So for typical South African tax resident like yourself, it would be applicable where you own normally where you own direct equity, so shares in US companies.
And I mean,
Now,
most of us do because, the US makes up an enormous percentage of a global equity portfolio, for example.
yes,
So, if you've got a share portfolio, you're
absolutely.
going to have US stocks in it.
You are going to have US stocks in it. And I think to add to that, as you know, in South Africa, we get a 3.5 million rand estate duty abatement before you have to start paying estate duty here. Now, for US non-residents, so like ourselves, that equivalent abatement amount in the US is only $60,000. And the top rate for your US estate tax is 40%. So it can be a quite a significant advice. So amount that you need to pay. So your ad advisor will be able to assist with, alternatives. How do you still get that same US exposure, but via, for example, a unit trust or funds that are not domiciled in the US, which is the important differentiate. Or, for example, where you invested in through a wrapper and not directly owning those stocks on your equity portfolio.
Are very important and something that certainly I've had to to consider. Are there any other death taxes? I mean, you did mention earlier that there are, depending on jurisdictions, but are there any other death taxes in various jurisdictions that we need to be aware of? And how do double taxation agreements work? So that, because it feels to me like with CITES, it's a double taxation. I'm going to have to pay in the US and I'm going to have to pay in South Africa.
So I think the interesting thing about the death taxes is that some countries call it the same thing, but it applies completely differently, and some countries call it different names, but it's actually the same type of tax. So whether you call it an estate tax or an estate duty, an inheritance tax, some countries have a probate fee or stamp duty, and really for each one you have to consider on what does it apply and on who is it actually applicable. So in the same way that South Africa has got quite a few double tax agreements that are income tax agreements with various jurisdictions, and those really addresses income tax, capital gains tax, dividend withholding tax, but we only have a few estate duty double tax agreements. Really, only currently valid are with the US and the UK, and then some of the Southern African countries.
Okay,
And
yeah, that's
yeah,
going to have quite significant implications
it's
then.
quite significant. And I mean, so where you have an agreement like that, say with the US, you can only apply that agreement where you are tax resident here or in the US or in both jurisdictions. And then it's relevant for the assets that you own in those jurisdictions only. So it does not apply to your, Swedish assets or assets anywhere located anywhere else. What we do, however, have that also assists is in the Estate Duty Act, there's also a provision that you can get a deduction for death duties on foreign assets that you've paid to a foreign tax authority. So it doesn't help with SA assets, it helps with foreign assets, and it's limited to the actual South African tax that would be payable on that asset. So if you're paying a 40% in the US, you'll get the deduction in South Africa, but it will still only be up to the 20 or 25% that you have to pay in South Africa. But
Whereas
it
you've paid
will,
40% in the US,
so
right?
you'll end up paying the higher percentage. And yeah, I mean, it's not automatic. You have to do obviously the necessary calculations and to be able to claim that deduction. So it's really it's a lot more limited than you would have for our double tax income tax agreements.
And then one of the things that obviously being a fiduciary expert, you all know all about wills. This is another question that comes up. So now if you've got offshore assets, should you have both a local will and an offshore will? Is there a way to structure your local will to address all of these sort of complexities?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I'm quite passionate about, Maya, and it's obviously a question that our advisors get asked all the time. And like with most of these things, there's not just one answer for every scenario. So there's a few things that you have to consider. So what's the nature of the assets that you have in these jurisdictions? Sometimes if it's an immovable property in a specific country, it may be best to have a will that deals with that asset only. Sometimes you have a small amount of cash in a jurisdiction, that may not warrant a separate will. Sometimes you have an asset in a jurisdiction that has got forced heirship rules, and you need a specific will with specific wording to enable you to almost defer from that forced heirship rules. And I think one which we see quite often is the situation where you have assets in one jurisdiction that has to settle liabilities that you may have in another jurisdiction. To give you an example, is where you have the situation where a South African tax resident individual receives a loan from the South African trust to externalize those funds, and outside of South Africa, you use that funds and you make a loan to the family foreign trust. Now, to simplify, say you've got no other assets or liabilities. So in South Africa, you have a local liability, the amount that you owe the trust, And outside of South Africa, you have a foreign asset, the amount that the foreign trust owes you. If you now have separate wills dealing with South African assets and foreign assets, that foreign executor can go ahead and transfer your foreign loan to the foreign trust or your other beneficiaries where you have bequeathed it to, and it leaves the South African executor with no assets to repay the local liability. So where you have cases like that, where your assets and liabilities, or even assets between different jurisdictions are connected, in my view, it's better to deal with them in one single document. Now, sometimes having different wills can actually ease administration of your estate as well, because your executor may be required to get a court certified copy of your will, which is registered here in South Africa and submitted to the master's office. If that needs to be submitted to a foreign jurisdiction, that can add to the delays in the process. So in some cases, that will be better if you have separate wills. I think the benefits of having the separate wills, can be significant, but there's also a danger that unintentionally your one will revokes the other will, where you sign them on different dates and don't have the correct wording in there. And you also have to be very clear about what assets are covered by each will. And what I've also seen quite a few times is, say you have assets in three jurisdictions, South Africa, the UK, and Guernsey. And now you draft three different wills, each addressing assets in South Africa, UK, and Guernsey. But 2 years later, you acquire another asset in another jurisdiction. And suddenly you don't have a will that addresses that asset. So it's very important that at least or only one of your wills should also have a catch-all saying, this applies to my assets in the UK and anywhere else located except for South Africa, for example. And depending on the facts, that could be your South African will, which has got that catch-all. But vital to obviously get advice when necessary in the different jurisdictions, but also ensure that there's someone who looks at it together and make sure that if you look at your assets and liability sheet and you look at your wills, that there's nothing that's not addressed anywhere, and there's nothing that's addressed in more than one of the wills, which can also happen.
Gosh, I
And
tell you, this gets very complicated. I think this is where good advice. Please don't try and do your will through ChatGPT.
absolutely not. And I think, I mean, finally, often one will is absolutely sufficient. But then even in that one will, most often you will still deal with your South African assets separately from your foreign assets in that one will, because you'll have different heirs or for whatever other reason. So even one will, you can ensure that you deal with that separately.
And it was quite interesting when we were looking at our will. We only have a South African will, that foreign assets cannot be bequeathed to a South African trust. And I was worried about this because I have testamentary trusts for my children, or so I thought, well, I can't leave the foreign assets to my children to or to the testamentary trust. But is there an exemption if it's a special trust?
Yes. And I mean, that's very true what you're saying. And unfortunately, I think what has happened for many people is that if you've not re-looked at your will in the last few years, there was a time when the sort of standard will read that you left all of your assets, if there's no spouse or on the death of the surviving spouse, you leave all of your assets to a South African established trust. And that was drafted and done at the time when you perhaps did not own any foreign assets. So now, with the rule that South African trusts cannot directly own foreign assets, that may result in the assets having to be repatriated to South Africa, which is obviously not something that you intended and would want to do. And that's if the executor cannot get the Reserve Bank approval for the trust to own that asset. So with the testamentary trust, it's temporary. It's while the children are still young, and they can inherit it directly, ultimately. So there it will typically be allowed for the testamentary trust to hold that assets in the interim period until it can be transferred to the individual beneficiaries.
So, but again, these are things that you need to understand, because you may actually create a inter vivos trust, for example, and that you don't realize that those assets cannot
Yeah.
be included in it. And again, Ilana, go back to the fact that this is why we have to review this stuff. This is why we do have to sit down and check how the laws changed. Is my will, are my assets still all
Yeah.
relevant in terms of the way that the law has moved or the taxes have moved? And I do have to tell you, I've actually largely, my decision in the end was to remove these complexities by moving my offshore assets into a structure. Now, I do have to say it is totally coincidental that it happens to be the 91 Global Life portfolio. I'm not promoting it or anything, but that's the one that I'm
Yeah.
using. But there's many companies that offer something similar, which is effectively, I suppose, like an endowment wrapper. So maybe just to end off, for people who may not want to have five different wills and have all these complexities, how do these wrapper products remove some of the issues we've discussed?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So not all assets are devolved in terms of a will. So certain investments, and also the wrapper and the 91 Global Life portfolio that you're talking about, there you can nominate your beneficiaries. And that beneficiary or beneficiaries will then have a choice when the time comes to take the lump sum out of, or the cash out of the investment, or alternatively to continue with that policy. Now, it effectively bypasses the estate administration process, so not the estate from a tax perspective, but from an administration perspective, which means that you also save on the estate, on the executor's fees, which, is not necessarily your intention, but that assists. And it also shortens the time that it takes for the beneficiaries to receive their benefits. It is, however, very important that where you have assets which you can nominate your beneficiaries for, that you also make sure that that provisions and nominations speak to your will as well and do not contradict each other. In the sense that you have maybe drafted your will a while ago, and you decided that I am leaving a specific asset, let's call it an immovable property, to my one child, and I'm nominating my other child as a beneficiary on my policy. Now, a few years later, your child that would have inherited the property says, "Mom, I'm no longer living in South Africa. I no longer want to use that property." You don't have to leave that to me specifically. And you change your will to say that everything can be sold and my children will inherit equally. But you do not change your beneficiary nomination on your other asset. And the outcome can be completely different than what your intention was. So very often, if you make a change to a beneficiary nomination, it can also necessitate a change to your will, and vice versa.
And I
So
think
I
that's
think it's
important that because that would trump your will. So the policy trumps your will. And actually, I've often had people
absolutely.
coming to me saying, but in the will, it said this, but the life
Yeah.
company has paid out differently. And that is because the policy is
Correct.
taken it's the policy, right? It doesn't fall within your
Yeah.
will. Yeah.
It doesn't fall in your walls. So it's very important that it must all be looked at together and not in isolation, and making sure that when you review, which you should do often, and whenever there's anything that changes from a personal circumstance, a life, a beneficiary that passes away or that moves away, or a big asset that's being acquired or sold, or when there's a legislation change. But when you do review, remember to also review beneficiary nominations and to review the will at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, Ilana, I think it was so helpful. And I think it is, obviously, this is not financial advice, but what we're doing is we're raising the things that you have to think about. And I really appreciate you coming to chat to me and to my listeners, because this is a process I've just been through. And I think there was a lot of things that, I kind of knew they were happening because I'm writing about them and all the rest, but I hadn't really sat down and said, wow, how is this going to affect my family? And in doing so, I've made some quite significant changes to my own investments and wills and all the rest of it. So, if I can learn, everyone can learn. So, Ilana, thank you once again for joining us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, Maya.